Today's Tailwind Nutrition Tip of the Trail is brought to you by Tailwind Nutrition. Don?
Well, Scott, no, it's just not me. This is you and I.
Yes.
And we're going to talk a little bit about variety being the spice of life. And I want to talk about variety in many aspects. One is the trail that you're running. Isn't it nice to go somewhere new and different and get away from that path that you've believe you may yourself have established and worn out? The reason there's a trail there is because of your regular attendance.
And I think it's more than geographic. I think that you can switch it up by, we've talked about this, running at night.
Right.
I think that you can run it in reverse and see a completely different trail.
Like the variety and different people. You know, you can invite somebody you haven't ran with in a while or you'd like to run with and get out with a different group. There's variety too.
And it's good for the soul.
It is, and it's also you know, we learn a lot from one another.
We do.
And when you're running with the same person over and over, sometimes you rehash some of the same stuff. So it's good to get out there and
share
explore,
share experiences, share equipment. You may even want to share nutritional tips like Tailwind Nutrition.
Oh, Scott, listen, always talking Tailwind. Now listen, I got another one for you.
Yeah,
that's a long variety, and that is shoes. You know, I enjoy, you know, same trail, same morning, which I love running with you in the morning, Scott.
Yep.
But sometimes I change it up, and maybe you don't recognize, but I'm in a different pair of shoes.
I notice all the time.
And that makes it a little bit different for me.
A different trail?
I look up at the line of shoes, the shoe lineup, and I say, you know, today is just a...
We all have that little spot in our house or in our garage that we have all of our shoes lined up.
Well, some of them have to be hidden. I can't show them all. For you know, marital reasons, I've got to keep part of my arsenal tucked away.
Yeah,
she has accused me of having too many shoes.
Mine are all in a pile.
That's a good strategy. Piles can be deceiving.
Although that can be another Tailwind Nutrition tip of the trail is you don't put them in a pile because it takes you forever to try to find the right mate.
You don't want to pile up your shoes. You don't tie them together. You know what I've done, Scott? I have actually, in the rafters, I have nails up there, and I hang my shoes on individual nails, and they're partnered up, and they're out there just so I can just look at them and appreciate them, and I enjoy looking at, like, many people go out and enjoy their roses they're working on. I just like looking at my shoes.
I'm going to challenge you, Don.
What's that?
I need a picture of that we're going to post of your shoes in the rafters.
You got it. We'll attach it to this very podcast.
So go to tailwindnutrition.com. Check out the many different flavors. I heard a rumor the other day, Don.
What's the rumor, Scott?
They are working on a caffeinated version of Tailwind Nutrition.
I saw that rumor hit Twitter somehow, a picture of powdered caffeine.
Yeah.
I don't know what those scientists are doing over there at Tailwind Nutrition, but they're cooking up something.
The researchers are busy at work.
I hear they're very busy and not sleeping at all.
I have heard that Tailwind Nutrition is all you need all day. Really?
It's got all the stuff you need. It's got calories. It's got electrolytes. And you wrap that around some good H2O.
And flavor.
There's variety in their flavors.
So go to tailwindnutrition.com. Take their challenge. It's a great way, risk-free way, to give Tailwind Nutrition a try. Jenny and Jeff are a grassroots cottage industry that have developed this because they're endurance athletes. They weren't satisfied with what was out there, and they developed something that is just what we've fallen in love with, and that's why we're doing this, is we want to promote it because it's such a good product.
Got a lot of people that we've told about, and now that's their go-to drink for training and racing.
So put some berry lemon in your water and go out and run.
Mas.
Now for another Petzl nighttime running strategy. Today, we are lucky to have the director of marketing from Petzl on the line, John Evans. Hey, John.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I'm excited to be here.
Great. Now, the one thing about John is he's not only the vice or the marketing director for Petzl, he's also a trail runner. He's run the infamous Bear 100, which is a nasty, nasty 100-mile race in Utah.
Lots of climbing, and I believe a 36-hour cutoff time. Correct me if I'm wrong, John, but they give you a little extra time there because it isn't easy.
And go ahead.
No, that's right, 36-hour cutoff time. Yeah.
And he ran it in under 25. So not only is John an ultra runner, but he's a fast one at that.
Yeah, that's good.
But we decided to have John on because he has a nighttime running tip. You want to share it with us, John?
I'm happy to share it with you guys. It's actually kind of a simple one, and that running tip is to get out and run at night. But there's a certain logic to that, and what I'm thinking is if you're going to be out running a 100-mile race, it's really nice to break out the nighttime section into almost a completely separate event.
Nice.
So in order to enjoy that event, you want to be really comfortable with the idea of it creeping up on you.
You know, before you expand on that creeping up stuff, John, I like the way that you've said separating the two events, almost giving yourself permission that once the nighttime run starts, you're allowed to be fresh again and look at the race completely new instead of a continuation of the start and being out there for 12, 14, 16 hours and still running. You're actually into your night event for just 2 hours, and so you're still set to go. I like that. I'm going to use that.
You know, and it also, in my mind, from what he just said, it almost gives you something to look forward to.
Oh yeah, I'm always looking forward to the
because
night.
There's
some advantages.
You're looking forward to starting a different race.
It's,
you know,
cooler.
It's cooler. Your pace usually slows down a little bit, and it's something you look forward to.
The food changes at aid station, Scott.
It does.
All of a sudden, you get some of these generous aid station captains breaking out the
ice cream
and some. Well, that's during the day. The pizza, the soup to mend the wounded body.
Yeah.
This is John's tip. We better let him talk. John, go ahead. Things creeping up on us. What's going? Tell me what's going to creep up on me out there. Heck.
Well, that depends on where you live. I run at night alone.
If you're in a Petzl, I understand you're not alone.
People in the Wasatch that do. But I would recommend you get a buddy or two and you run. Ideally, you know, in our neck of the woods, you know, we'd be out training on the Wasatch 100 or the Bear 100 course. The legs you're going to be doing at night, you train on those and you get really comfortable with them.
There is a phase of being uncomfortable to becoming comfortable running at night. You know, when you're fresh out, there are sounds like think back to this one bush that I'm talking about. Scott,
oh yeah,
Moore.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
As we run down that one section, and there are a bunch of birds that live in that thing.
Yes.
And as soon as you hit them, they bounce out of there and make more noise than you're ready for.
And every time I run by that bush, I am not thinking about that bush, and it still makes me jump about 3 feet in the air.
Well, you know, you run by it enough, Scott, you're going to get used to that. So we're going to have to go out there and get some more right nighttime running in. But that's always fun to bring a new guy out and let him find that bush for himself. So getting used to some of the sounds out there makes a big difference.
Now, John, I'm going to take advantage of having the marketing director on from Petzl. As you know, in many of our nighttime running strategies, we've talked about this Petzl running lamp called the NAO. And I apologize for calling it the NAO early in our strategies.
NAO.
But tell us a little bit about that. You were talking to us that it's really a headlamp that was designed for trail running. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the NAO is really the first light that was designed for kind of high-performance trail running in mind. And it brings several new things to the market. The most revolutionary thing is what they call reactive lighting. So it's a pretty simple concept. Think of it like an electric car that when you are idling, it saves energy. And then when you are moving fast, it kind of, you know, uses more energy. So when you're going up a hill and you don't need a lot of light, it dims down to be kind of like an ordinary headlamp. But when you're going downhill or when you're route finding and you're looking out 200 yards for a reflector, it powers up to 355 lumens. So you can see those reflectors a quarter mile away or a half mile away.
Well, yeah, and I think I've seen Killian Jornet in this very headlamp in some photos.
Yep, Killian's one of our athletes, and he's had some impact on the development of it. And it is designed for, you know, technical races like the Hard Rock or the Wasatch 100, where having that extra light provides an extra margin of safety and it enables you to move a little bit faster.
I've had a chance to wear that headlamp, and it's comfortable. It has a battery in the back that's completely different, as it is rechargeable. You can plug it right into a USB-type connection and recharge that battery. and you can replace them quickly on the at an aid station if it's starting to drain down. It just pops right in, and you don't have to fumble with positive side, negative side, four batteries, small, hands cold, not working.
Point.
It just plug and play.
And I've said this before. The one thing I really like about it is it has that battery indicator on there, so you know whether you're at half battery, full battery, you're on one bar left. You know when to change it out. I like that a lot.
I'm a battery freak. You know that, Scott. I like full. I like full power all the time, and I will not compromise decreased power and risk of falling and fracturing wrists and things like that. It just doesn't make sense to me. So I think I'm on the government's anti-green list of going through too many batteries. So this
so
is
rechargeable is good.
This is going to take me off the list.
John, can you talk one about another thing that I think we need a little more education on? Is that you, Petzl has developed an OS software for specifically the Now headlamp, and now it works with some of the core rechargeable headlamps, like I think the Tika 2 and what's the other one? The
Mio?
No.
Tika XP and the Tika line. So the software is kind of nice. I think a lot of ultra runners are pretty technical people, and they'd probably be pretty into kind of playing with the software.
Oh yeah.
But what you can do is you can say, all right, I only want to use one battery all night, and I don't care if it's not the super most brightest setting. You can program it so it will last you all night long.
Wow, that's pretty
so
cool.
It kind of like says, all right, I'm not going to get as bright, and it enables you to kind of program how bright you want it.
Can you override that manually if you are out on a run? You know, you have it programmed to run to be, let's say it.
No, once it's programmed to, like, you know, you can basically set the battery. You say, I want the battery to last a minimum of 12 hours. It will not let you override that.
Oh, okay. That's very
cool.
So
it's in the battery. So if you had two batteries, an extra battery in the pack, you could have a super bright battery where you could say, you know,
I want it to run 6 hours.
Then you could use that. If it's like the second part of a race, my eyes are getting even more dim than my legs, I need extra light at that point. That would be a nice option.
So, John, you're telling me you can take the guesswork out of how long your batteries are going to last.
Right.
That's very cool.
So you basically say, oh, I want the batteries to last 10 hours because you know that you're going to turn it on 20 minutes after sunset and you want to go to the sunrise. So then you can just be guaranteed you're going to have that much light the whole time.
Awesome. Well, Petzl's.
And if that's not enough light for you, then you buy a second battery and you make it last 5 hours and you change it at the aid station.
Very good. Well, we appreciate the work and development that Petzl's putting in out there.
And your nighttime running strategy that you gave us earlier.
So, Scott?
Yeah, it's kind of zen. Just go out and do it.
just go out. I think that's another company's motto, John. I think you need to work on your marketing there.
Just do it. Mikey likes it. What else do we have?
Don't squeeze the Charmin.
Get calls.
Don't squeeze the Charmin.
John, thank you very much. Now go grab a headlamp. Go get a couple friends.
Run the trails at night.
Moss.
Are we recording?
You guys ready?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Recording?
I'm stretching my groin.
I'm just going to say, you have to raise your game right now because this sucks.
Yeah.
Well, I don't usually run with a pack, but I usually have a little Girl Scout runner friend with me that will bring... Seriously, she
Wait,
calls
she has
herself...
a Girl Scout?
I actually I rent a Girl Scout, child labor, and I make them mule my teepee.
And action!
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott War.
And I'm Don Freeman. Today we're joined by Dr. Ryan Green. Scott, my mic's not even... I'm not in front of my mic. You don't even tell me that stuff. I'm sitting here all ready to go. Are we ready? My mic's going like in left field over there.
You're going north, it's going south?
Do you think I was going to run around the table? So we have Dr. Ryan Green with us, and Dr. Green is essentially an expert inside of the running store. We've heard from him from Dustin Hinton, one of the Trail Runner Nation members, and he said, you really need to talk to Ryan Green because anytime I need something to learn about my feet, about shoes, we all go to Ryan. So we thought if Dustin's going, maybe we should too.
Excellent. And Ryan, tell us a little bit about yourself. Are you a doctor of running? What is your PhD in? And tell us about your running stores that you're the managing director of.
Sure. I guess I've developed into a doctor of running, although there's no degree program for that just quite yet. hey, maybe we'll set one up.
Forge the way. Be a pioneer. I like it.
There we go.
And we will put you right there into that designation. Do we have the power on a podcast to do that, Scott, to create a designation of running, a doctor of running?
We can do whatever we want.
Let's do it. Okay. Our running doctor of running is in, Ryan Green.
There we go.
Yeah.
I have my doctorate of kinesiology from LSU down here, and so understand the way the body moves has been really a kind of a passion of mine through the years, and started running when I was 12. And so, you know, from then till now, all the years of running, and then the combination of the science and knowing how the body moves and so forth, and I also have a background in athletic training, so understanding about prehab as well as rehab and so forth. It's a good combination here, and I'm fortunate to be doing this. I love it.
Okay, you said a term there that I have never heard. What is prehab?
Yeah, so prehab is basically prevention, doing rehabilitation exercises to prevent any potential injuries from cropping up. And, of course, Jay DeSherry's book, Anatomy for Runners, has some excellent prehab exercises in there, just kind of general maintenance stuff. And so, you know, athletic trainers on whatever level help athletes in whatever their sport is to not get injured. And if they do, then take care of them. So that's kind of prehab.
You know, just a little infomercial real quick, interlude. If this is...
I'm going to Google interlude. I don't think... Well, go ahead, Scott. Maybe it is an interlude. Go ahead.
I think it's interlude's a word.
All right.
If this is your first podcast that you're listening to of Trail Runner Nation, and you just heard the name Jay DeSherry, Anatomy of Runners.
Four runners.
Excuse me, doctor. Thanks for correcting me. Anatomy for Runners. You need to get that book. We've talked about Jay DeSherry's name has come up probably in the last three podcasts.
Mm-hmm. With Sally McRae.
Yep. And if you don't have that book, stop, pause. If you've already started your run, turn around, go back, use your smartphone, and order the book. It's a great book.
And go back and catch Jay DeSherry on the podcast, because we've had him on the podcast.
Yeah, we linked it in Sally's last podcast.
Good.
Continue, doctor.
Yeah, so the stores that I'm a part of and work with is Varsity Sports, and we have four in South Louisiana, and we opened our first in 2000, and actually I was in graduate school in Baton Rouge at LSU and when we opened the store there. And so it was just kind of a natural fit, me going through grad school, working at the store kind of part-time, probably more there than I was in my studies a little bit, but I still got through it and just really learned the craft of fitting and combined that with my science.
We like to call that clinic. You are in clinic. You are applying your science in real world application.
Real world application, absolutely. No copays there.
No copays and a human petri dish. You know, you can experiment with these runners.
Yeah, the experiment of one. I know Dr. Cucuzel always talks about everybody's an experiment of one, and yeah, everybody that comes in the door is a totally different situation for me to encounter. So it's fun.
So here's one. I have a question for you. It's nice to get in front of an expert at a running store and ask this question. And so I'm ready to hear. How many miles should my shoe last? You know, you hear numbers of after 300 they're gone. You have other people that have taken pictures on the internet and posted just how many miles they have on a pair of shoes. Somewhere in between, I've got to think, lies the truth.
And the internet is dangerous. Because if somebody says, as we all know, if one person puts it out there and it's on a Wikipedia or something like that, it's the Bible.
Right.
But you know, everybody is different. So a couple of variables that I tell folks to look at, look at the conditions that they're running in. You know, where we are, a lot of the time of the year is super humid, soppy, wet, You know, where you guys are, it's probably a ton drier, so that the environment's going to have a lot of effect on the footwear. The person, how they are, do they run heavy? Do they run light? You know, folks that typically that I see that are in a lighter, more flexible shoe, and we'll just call it for sake of this podcast, you know, more than minimal shoes, typically run with a lighter foot strike. Well, they may put less stress on their shoes because they are absorbing in a more of a natural way the forces that the earth is pushing back against them. If the shoe has to take the brunt of a lot of the forces that are coming at them, then the shoe may break down a little bit sooner. So, you know, you have, yeah, anywhere from 300 to 500 miles. We have two pairs of shoes here, and I'll call the brand out, Newton. We have hanging on our wall that one's got a little over, I think Nicole's got a little over 1,200 miles on that pair. And then another pair, Paul has a little over 1,500 miles. And now those are the exception. Those are not your typical runner. And really, what's your typical runner? I don't know.
So I'll ask you this. What should I look for in my shoe? If I'm, you know, who knows what kind of conditions I'm in, because we're talking to everybody everywhere, we hope. How should I evaluate my shoe? What do I look for?
Yeah, a couple different things. You know, there's different parts to the shoe. It's just not all one unit. It should function as one unit, but it's just a lot of individual parts. So the very bottom of the shoe is called, and I'm just going to, I know your folks can't see it, but I'm going to grab a shoe so that kind of helps me talk.
Unless you're running or driving, grab your shoe.
Don't grab your shoe then. Driving's barefoot in some states. They're illegal in some states, I think, right?
Well, maybe in Louisiana.
Hey, we're barefoot a lot of the time. It's okay.
But out here, when we leave the house, we usually put our shoes on.
That's right. So a couple different parts. So the outsole right there is the part where the tread meets the road. And so that's where wear is usually seen first on the shoe, whether it's on the lateral edge, the medial edge, way back on the heel, somebody is more up in the forefoot. You know, any of those spots is a good thing to look at first. And you should bring your old shoes too when you go to get fit or to find what you need.
So Dr. Green, I see you pushing on the shoe. What you're looking at here is the forefoot right there at the ball of the foot. That's what you're showing us on the video here.
Right, okay. Now, yes.
All right.
That's what I'm sorry. Yeah, that's
no,
the orientation.
No problem. Yep.
You know, so then you have the midsole. And the midsole, in my opinion, is kind of the meat and potatoes of the shoe. So that's the area between the upper and the tread or the outer of the shoe. And that's kind of right there. You know, the foam.
Okay.
On a lot of shoes, you see the, if it's typically classified as a stability shoe, it'll have that gray foam through the midsole area there. If it's typically classified as a cushion shoe, it's just the white foam through there. And that stuff is changing. The classifications are changing of shoes and so forth, and we can talk about that later. But in that area, you want to look for creases, look for signs of damage and wear. I always tell folks it's like if you cut a slice of a tree out and look at the rings of a tree, the more rings they have, that means the older the tree is. You can look for different interruptions in the rings to see if there was fire or flood or something like that. Your shoe kind of is the same thing over time. It'll get signs of wear. And again, typically in the midsole area.
Okay.
And then of course the upper, the part that we all love to look at and the part that takes us to the wall first, the part where the laces and the design.
The top of the shoe.
You got it. And that it has some integrity as far as keeping it on your foot, but when it starts to fray or you see your toes punching out of the upper, Scott, it's probably your shoe, right?
Yeah.
That's usually a good indication that, yeah, you might need to start looking at a new pair because the shoe may not be functioning the right way. The one thing that I would think that is more important than anything that I just said is that how does it feel on your foot? And so if the shoe is really feeling flat, you don't feel like you have enough protection from the ground, you don't have what the shoe was doing for you before, then then you might want to look at investing in a new pair.
And I've been an advocate of that very thing, the shoe feeling flat. And the only way to really to know that it's feeling flat is to have something in rotation, so that you can have a bit of a newer shoe, and then you can keep track of where that older shoe is. Because pretty soon you just don't know.
Yeah, I as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, I don't know what the last time I really looked at my shoes, the bottoms of my shoes and the midsole of my shoes, to see if there is wear and tear. What I do is just what Don says. I have a couple pair in rotation. One's a much newer pair and one's a much older pair. And once I just don't feel good running in that older pair, it's time to hang those up.
Mm-hmm. And I think, whether it's 300 miles, whether that's 800 miles, if Scott, if that's what's bad for you, then you need to kind of keep that in mind. And, some folks catalog their shoes. Some people are obsessive about time and miles on their shoes and will literally mark, a one on the back of the shoe for this pair that's first, and then a two, and kind of track that way. Sure, if you want to do that, that's great. But if you just kind of, when it starts to feel flat, you just say, let me start to look at a new pair. So you're just kind of, because you're kind of losing what the shoe had that was, helping you and, on your trail, on your road, whatever you might be doing in your activity.
And like you said, everybody's different. I ran with a guy that every time on a road portion, every time that he would come down, it was almost a scuff, as if he was running down the steepest hill you could imagine, but it was on the flat. And his name's Wally. I'll call him out. He is so much faster than I am, even though he was scuffing every time. I didn't want to mention that, he'd land, that foot would come in and slide into that pavement. I didn't want to tell him if he didn't do that, he might be extra fast and I could never keep up with him. So I was grateful for his scuff because I got to think that wasn't efficient. But for him, his shoe would wear much different, say, than somebody else. So each one of those spots you talked about, the sole, mm-hmm. the foam, or the top, it really depends on your gait and who you are and what you're running and all that stuff. So there probably isn't just one key spot to look at. It depends on your gait.
Right. And that's where it kind of takes the trained eye and communication with somebody that you're kind of getting, fit by to kind of take it all in. When you go into a doctor's office, you don't just give them one part of the puzzle. You give them everything to try to help you, so it's kind of the same thing. And, your guy Wally may only get 150, 200 miles out of a pair of shoes because he is just shearing off the back of that heel. So that's just something, definitely keep in mind.
If you don't mind, I just want to move on just to a little related topic. One of the unwritten rules about running shoes is don't wear your running shoes around, like to walk or to,
I try to keep mine
as a daily shoe.
I keep mine pure. I'm afraid that I don't want to only trail running.
Yeah,
on that shoe.
Somebody told me one time.
Maybe it was me, Scott.
It may have been.
Don, you keep yours in a glass box when you're done running.
I have a few.
The smell and everything stays in there too.
I have a few in a place of honor. Yes.
But are you wearing them out, or are you doing your shoe a disservice by
going to the store in them?
Yeah.
Well, look, the more you drive your car, the more it wears down. Okay, so the thing about that, if you constantly change the tires on your car, change the oil and so forth, it'll last longer. So if you use your shoes more often, yes, they will begin to break down. If you only use those for 3 miles, 3 times a week, not you guys, but a lot of the folks that I see just that are general fitness folks, if you only use that a little bit, it'll typically last longer. When you have a shoe on a shelf, just hanging out on the shelf by itself, there's really not a whole lot of environmental factors, that are playing on that. So if you do use it a lot, it will wear down sooner than somebody that does not use it a lot. So you just have, kind of look at if you wear it to run, then you go and you wear it around when you're doing a podcast and you run to the store, you run to work in it, you do all that. You're wearing them for 12, 15 hours out of the day versus just maybe an hour out of the day. So, like Jay had said in this podcast earlier, and he tests a a ton of shoes, and I get a lot of good information from him. Shoes don't have feelings. They're not living things. They don't regenerate.
They don't? They don't have feelings?
I talked to mine.
Them. They won't respond.
I think Faith names hers.
Left and right.
Yeah.
There you go. Fast and slow.
Yeah.
You know, so they won't regenerate. So once they start to break down, they can't bounce back. It's like when your car leaves the showroom floor, that's the most valuable it's going to be and the best it's probably going to feel in its life. I think shoes are the same kind of way. And the thing is, though, that a human is on those. We are on those, so we have to really be one with the shoe.
Mm-hmm. You brought up that there aren't any environmental factors to a shoe. Could I take a shoe and find my favorite shoe? Can I place them underneath my bed, let them sit there, and pull them out of the box 3 years from now and have essentially that shoe with the same performance level and value and duration as if it was the day, you know, I bought it brand new?
Mm-hmm. And this is nothing scientific. This is just anecdotal, just what I've heard in the store. And I've had folks that a shoe of theirs was being discontinued.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They bought six pairs.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see them 3 years later. And they're like, wow, my shoe, it feels good like it used to, but it just doesn't feel right anymore. So I think the shoe stayed the same. The person changed. And that's where it's hard to really kind of validate how a shoe is going to affect, you know, at work on you when it has been on the shelf for a while. You haven't used it, you know. It's like putting on a stiff pair of jeans you haven't used in a while. It doesn't feel right. They're new and they work well, but they just don't feel like your old pair of jeans you use all the time. So I think that that's something to to consider. You know, when you're saving shoes, banking away shoes.
Yeah, shoe banking is as we refer to it.
I think when I first
starting
met,
now,
Don, when I think I first met you, didn't you have like you found a shoe, an old Mizuno that you
no,
liked?
No, that was Scott. Yeah, I mean no, you're Scott. That was Jeff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we had a friend that bought like I think eight pair.
Yeah. Because
he found a shoe that he just loved, and so and they were discontinuing or upgrading it to the whatever third generation, and he said, "I'm not gonna."
I didn't like the Mizuno. It picks up a rock right in the middle of that sole, and you've got to carry it around with you. Yeah.
We always say here, don't fall in love with the shoe. Fall in love with the person that fits you for the shoe.
Ah.
Now, the shoes will change.
So now let's talk about that. How do you know who you're... Scott, you have a question.
He mentioned something that we need to follow up on here. He was mentioning, you know, making the metaphor of a car and changing the oil and rotating the tires. Is there something that I can do to my shoe to help it last longer? Any maintenance work I can do on my shoe? Like, you know, when it's dusty right now in California, we get back from a run and our shoes are very dusty. I while the shoes are on my feet, I take them out to the front lawn and I just hose them off and make sure they're nice and clean. And I think
that's nice.
At least in my mind, I think, you know, well done, my shoes. You carried me today.
They don't have feelings, Scott. They don't have feelings.
They're
inert objects.
He's trying to pull the feelings out of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scott's shoes suck.
So what can I do to help my shoes last longer?
You know, there's a ton of products out there that claim to have shoes last longer and so forth, and I haven't found one that is just stands out above them all. Some might knock down the smell, which is fine, but what are the chemicals doing to the shoe? You know, the one thing you can simply do, and people ask me about this all the time, and I really got it from kind of the horse's mouth when I went out to Boulder and to the Newton School of Running a couple of weeks ago. And Ian Adamson, their director of education out there, talked about throwing the shoes in the washing machine and how that can actually have a bearing. Yeah, I know, you're shocked, huh? Well, you don't just have to hose it down your front yard. You can throw them in the washing machine. And I do that as well, but having it come from somebody that makes, you know, as part of the development of the shoe, I think is valuable information because, you know, they want to see shoes last as well, not break down. So throwing the shoes in there, what it does, you know, it cleans them. Obviously, you take out the sock liner of the shoe and take out the laces. And I usually throw mine in with a cold wash and towel so the shoes don't bounce around on their own, just so it's not as loud in the house as well. And it cleans. And so what that does, it'll... When it cleans everything, it takes the bacteria out and you know, anything that would have an adverse effect, and let's just kind of call it, for lack of a better term, eating away at the materials, would help kind of knock that down. So that will help extend the life. As far as on a daily basis, Scott, I don't, you know, again, shoes are not living, you know, so I think it comes back to what you know, Jay had said when he tests his shoes. They're not living, and so they can't regenerate or reproduce. although in my closet, it seems like they reproduce. My wife talks about, where did all these shoes come from? But I mean, seriously, they just, once they begin to break down, they will break down. So I haven't found anything yet. Again, maybe somebody's got something out there that'll have the shoes kind of, you know, regenerate. But I know that companies, and we see it every couple months, reps come to us from the companies and say that, you know, this shoe is going to last longer, is more durable. And I think that that's true to a point, because again, they've tested it on a certain individual or certain style of runner and so forth. And there's just so many variables that come into running. I mean, you guys see it from being on the trail a ton. I mean, you don't have the exact same foot plant on a trail all the time. It's constantly changing. And so you don't, your foot's not constantly being dorsiflexed. You know, your toe's not constantly coming back up towards you. That's putting a certain stress on the shoe. So, you know, that's kind of an overall arching claim from the companies, but they are trying to make them more durable. I mean, they don't want to see their shoes last, you know, 2 weeks.
Is there any truth to the, again, the old wives' tale, old runner wives' tale, that I should never run in my the same shoe
2 days in a row?
2 days in a row, that I should, right. I need to rotate so you can fluff up the, I don't know. Is there any truth
fluff
to
your
that?
EVA?
Yeah. Is there any truth to that?
There's no fluffing going on there. You know, having you guys had said it before, having more arrows in your quiver, so to speak, is good. If you can rotate that through, and I tell folks this all the time, and I try to follow it as best as possible, a shoe will put stress on certain points around your feet. And therefore around your ankle, shins, knees, and so forth up, good or bad stress. You need some stress for the tissue to strengthen, and get, you know, for the next run or whatever it might be to stabilize itself. If you put too much stress constantly on the same spot, that area can break down. So if you have, let's say shoe A, it puts stress on your heel, your calcaneus a ton. And shoe B puts more stress on your forefoot a ton. Well, if you rotate those, you're constantly altering the stress on your feet. Don't so much worry about the stress on the shoe, because there's no feelings there. Worry about the stress on the feet and on you. And so I think if you can rotate it that way, that's a good, healthy habit to get into. Does everybody do it? No. There's a number of reasons they don't. You know, there might be financial reasons. They may fall in love with the shoe, and they just love to put it on and go run in. I mean, I'm guilty of that more times than not. I try to wear different shoes and test them out so that I know what to tell my customers and my staff as to what everything feels like. But, you know, there's one shoe that I'll wear probably 90% of the time that I go out and run, because I really like the way it feels. And it just, you know, so figure out what works best for you.
Two questions.
Wait, one at a time, Scott.
two questions. The first one is, and I realize that all people, you know, people have different feet and different running gaits, and so a shoe fit is very individual. What is the shoe that you run in 90% of the time?
Yep. I'm not afraid to say, because it really has been nice. It's a Merrell Bear Access. So the Merrell Bear Access is a flat zero drop shoe, and I know your educated listeners know what that is. You guys have talked about that a ton. It's got a wide toe box. It's flexible, and it's only got about, I think, 8 millimeters of foam from forefoot to rear foot. So there's no drop on it. But for me, that works well. You know, I have a fairly, what folks would consider, neutral to high arch. I don't have a ton of ankle hypermobility. It moves more than, let's call what it should. So, you know, I'm kind of the boring foot, and the shoe works for me. But I also mix in there too. I mix in a Mizuno Kosaurus, which is their flat, you know, in their Evo line. So that's that 10%, Scott, too. So,
okay.
you know, I've run most recently a little bit more in the Newton Energy. It's a new shoe that they have out. But I've run in the Brooks Flow. And actually, you guys will be interested in this. I ran in the Brooks Pure Grit for my
right. Yeah.
For my I did a 50K trail run, the MS 50 in Mississippi over here. It was my first real long, it was my first ultra, really.
Uh-huh.
And I ran in that shoe. And, you know, it was not super technical like what you guys have. There was definitely some ups and downs, a ton of water. I mean, there was water to my mid thighs. Well, that shoe had some traction, which was good enough, but it drained very well. Mm. And so for down here, that's a pretty decent shoe for folks that want to hit the trail. So, you know, so there's a bunch of different things that I kind of work into the mix.
I ran in the Brooks Grit, and that's what I've been running in. And I really think the draining is huge and important mm-hmm. to have in your shoe, so that when you do hit that water, you're not sloshing around and carrying for a while and that water. But it also allows it to breathe well too. If it's going to let water mm-hmm. out, it's also going to let air in and move back and forth in the foot, which is good. Scott, I got in the middle of your question. Go ahead.
No. Well, you know, I have about six questions that come up every time you start explaining things, Ryan. But
we can save some of those for future podcasts if we can't fit them all in today.
Back to the original question when I said I had two questions.
Uh-huh.
Are you advocating that if you're rotating a shoe that it should be a different model or a different brand of shoe? I think that's what you were saying. Don't have two shoes that are exactly the same and rotating them. Maybe have two different mm-hmm. kinds of shoes so that they may be affecting your body.
Foot strike.
Yeah, in different ways.
Well, and yeah, so if we'll take the shoe that I wear right now. If I have two brand new pair of Bare Access 2 and that I'm rotating through, one may have a slightly different wear pattern for whatever reason than the other one. So that may put a little bit different stress on my body than another. It's probably not going to be real different. It's you know, chances are it's going to be very, very similar. So in essence, am I actually getting the same stress day in and day out, even if I'm switching shoes? I don't know. Maybe that's a Jay DeSherry study that we need to have him check into. I would say, Scott, that having different styles, you know, maybe you like a flatter, more minimal shoe. Maybe you like a traditional drop. Maybe you like somewhere in between. find something like that. You know, with the shoe, this is kind of the golden age of shoe wear and development, in that there's so many different offerings. So if you have one day you have a zero drop shoe, another day you have an 8 millimeter drop shoe, you know, Saucony has really dropped all of their shoes down to 8 millimeter drop. So that's kind of one that has sometimes will fit in for folks that don't want to go totally flat, but don't want to be at a traditional 12 millimeter drop shoe. Those will all put different stresses on your body. And you know, for me, I like a flat shoe. I might go up to 4 millimeter drop, like a Pure Flow. But I really like something that's flat. So I think that, you know, if I had two Bare Access, they probably would stress my body in pretty much the same way. And that's just what I'm kind of thinking. There's nothing scientific on it. So kind of having totally different shoes will definitely change the stress.
You know, I'm gonna ask, you know, just for variety's sake, Don, yeah. what are your two favorite shoes right now that you're rotating?
Oh,
or do you have more than two?
The yellow one and the green one. Scott, there's like, and I'm gonna be honest, I've got a bunch hanging up, and I just love rotating through them. You know, I ran in something different last night. It's just as much as I like changing a trail and changing the topic of conversation as we're running down the road, I like to put something different on my foot. And I never really thought about until what Dr. Green just said is that, you know, you land different, you load your foot different or your body different. Maybe that's what appeals to me about swapping out the shoes. I haven't really considered that angle, but I do like that rotation. It just gives variety. Some days I feel fast. Some days I want a little bit more comfort. I just, you know.
Well, you know, and I'm going to agree with you there. As I've gotten more and more into running, you know, I was looking for the shoe that fit me, and then I'd buy a couple pair and use those to rotate. But what I found more over the years is I like to do exactly like you just said, and like Dr. Green, is have, you know, two shoes that are very different sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a couple mm-hmm. right now that I just, there's three pair that I'm thinking of right now. There's the Trekstra.
Yeah.
There's a Salomon shoe that I have that's more of a traditional shoe. It's you know, I can't remember what drop it is, but it's more of a traditional shoe. And then there's the, and I'm embarrassed to say this, the Kinvara. Is that a Brooks?
No,
it's a Saucony.
Saucony. I mean, that's, and it's a very minimalist shoe, and I have drop. Fun going from the Salomon, and then when I put on the Kinvara, it's like I'm free, I'm flying. but I don't want to stay in that all the time because I know that, at least for my gait, it kind of beats me up a little bit.
So you got to keep it on a shorter run.
Yeah, yeah.
Good. Well, that's something too. Is that if you're looking to change shoes. So Scott, let's say you're going from a traditional drop down to the Saucony Kinvara, which is a 4 millimeter drop. You know, that's going to take time, you know, for your body to adjust. So, you know, if you go too much, too fast, too soon in say the Saucony Kinvara, you're asking for trouble. Your body has to adapt from a
right.
traditional, offset, 12 millimeters down to 4, because that's going to put different stresses and loads on your body, on the soft tissue, on the bottom of your feet, on your Achilles, calf area, and so forth. So as folks, the one thing I would say is as folks transition, they really need to be patient with it. You know, Sally talked in the podcast about training. You know, when you go out to train for a marathon, you don't run 26, you know, 0.2 miles, or you don't run your 50K, your first training run. You know, it takes time and patience. You have to trust the shoe. You have to trust the fitting process. You have to trust the person that's fitting you if you're not doing it yourself. So just keep that in mind, you know, Scott and everybody else that's transitioning to different shoes, that if you're not used to the switch and it's a big gap, big difference, it can put some different stresses on your body that are not ready to handle it.
And that's a perfect lead-in to...
We plan that.
Yeah. To how
Check
how,
your show notes, Scott.
How do you find the right shoe? How do you get a good fit? And I'm gonna throw something out here. It's early in the morning, and I'm gonna be stupid here, and I'm gonna throw out my ignorance. You know, I have always heard, you know, there's stability shoes, there's neutral shoes, there's cushion shoes. I don't know what any of that means. I go and I go to a good running store and I ask the people to look at my running gait, and they say, okay, these are a couple shoes that you need to try. Now, with that stated, how do you know when you go into a running store or a sports store for that matter? Let's say it's a big box sports store and you're just getting into running and you don't know where to go to get your shoes. How do you know that you're getting a qualified individual that's trying to fit you?
Right. Well, the first thing is in my experience, and I do secret shopping at big box stores all the time. I do if I'm around here or if I'm traveling or something like that, I just kind of go in and walk around and just, it helps obviously from a business perspective. But also, you know, too, if you have a 19-year-old that works in the basketball section of a big box store, and you call him over to help you with running shoes, do you think he's going to help be able to help you with that?
You're going to be on the trail in some high tops.
You got it. Your high tops.
Some Chuck Air Taylor, Jordans.
Air Jordans. There we go. So you know, when you look at anything, specificity, having somebody or some place that is specifically there for the runner, for the act, you know, that kind of active individual, that's important because they, and I'm calling out, you know, specialty run shops, you know, mm-hmm. Typically your smaller mom and pop stores. I mean, we only have 4 stores, in South Louisiana, and that might sound like a lot, but you know, in the grand scheme of things, when you look at the big box stores that have thousands around the country, it's small. So, and each store knows about the trails in their area, about running groups in their area, about races or events in their area. So they're very much vested in that area. And they want to see people succeed in their runs. So they're going to take the time to go to running education classes, shoe fitting classes, talk to the reps, and learn about the footwear, learn about how the body moves in accordance with the footwear, or actually how it should be is how the footwear moves in accordance with the body and not interrupt what the body is doing. And then make recommendations, you know, off of that. There's all kind of different methods to evaluate someone for footwear. You know, the typical way to do it is to watch somebody standing and then watch the way they walk and then say, okay, yeah, this is the shoe for you. There's a movement to getting the person moved more dynamically. I never have the person just stand and base it off of arch height as to what shoe is going to be best for them. Because when they move, that foot is very dynamic. You know, if people want to go back and learn about the foot mechanics and so forth, listen to Jay's podcast with you guys, mm-hmm. and know that everything moves and changes constantly. So it doesn't do the runner justice if the footwear specialist looks at them stand, looks at their arch height and says, okay, this stability shoe is going to be good for you, or this neutral shoe is good for you. Because as you move, that spring, and Don, I think you talked about it on a previous podcast, or you know, that spring of your foot and arch, it moves and changes, and the dynamic of your foot changes. So, and then how do you find out the right person that that really knows what they're doing? The IRRA, Independent Running Retailers Association, has a listing of specialty running stores around the country. And that would be my first place to start, because the folks that, I think it's IRRA.org.
Okay, we'll link that to the podcast.
Okay, make sure I got the right address before you link it.
Okay.
But those are the places that the store owners, the shop staff, educate themselves. It's their passion. You know, they may not have medical-based training. You know, I just kind of put myself in this situation. They may just be passionate athletic folks that enjoy running, enjoy getting out on the trail, enjoy running with a group, and being healthy. So they learn about it. And, you know, we have some staff members here that they have just run for years and are passionate about it and enjoy the social interaction of running, but want to understand it as well. And so I think any place you can go that's passionate about it, you're going to probably be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, and you know what you just talked about, you know, going to school for X number of years and answering questions and regurgitating information does not substitute for passion. You know, you find a passionate person and they read about it and they study about it and they talk about it and they think about it when they're running, that far supersedes any class that you may have taken 10 years ago to qualify yourself for a degree. I'm all about the passion, finding that person.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Classroom knowledge is good. It gives you a little base and foundation. But when you get out in the real world and see how things change, mm-hmm. you know, because things are constantly evolving. And if you just stay stagnant in what you've learned about running and about fitting, you know, footwear fitting and training principles, if you just stay stagnant in your little box about that, you're kind of doing the running folks around you an injustice.
And if I may say, and I don't even know what's going to come out of my mouth, which happens most of the time, but I'm just going to say that just as consumers and as passionate runners, we can trust our instincts when we talk to people and qualify them and listen to them and ask questions and filter that information as it's coming back and say, you know what, that makes sense to me. This person sounds educated and intelligent. They're really talking about things that I hear Jay Dashari talk about or Ryan Green talk about or Mark Kukuzel. I'm hearing some of the same language that I've heard on these podcasts or reading or running or talking with their trail friends. Use your intuition in all phases of life, really, healthcare, and here we're getting philosophical, Scott, or financial stuff, or, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, we really have to use our instincts.
Don, you know, that's perfect. You know, I have a running mentor who is owner of all of our stores, Jenny Peters, who ran kind of in the golden age of women's running, you know, 84 Olympic trials and so forth. And she told me, she goes, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And so I think when you go to some place, if they start if they want to learn more about you and not talking about themselves, and you're right, this does carry over to all points of life. If they want to know about you, your training, your injury history, where you've come from, you know, everything about you, and don't mention anything about, you know, they may be an Olympic athlete. You know, we had a Olympic trialist, Rachel Booth for in the marathon, and she won the Princess Half Marathon twice. Mm-hmm. She would be on the sales floor talking to somebody about their footwear, and the woman said, "Oh, I'm so excited to run the Princess Half. I've never done it before." Mm. I would laugh because that woman didn't know that Rachel had won that race twice, and Rachel didn't mention a word about it. You know, so it's that humbleness and how they learn about, you know, everybody else. I think that's really, really valuable.
Isn't that fun to see in, as a quality in people, just being humble like that, where you're watching a runner speak to somebody else, and man, you just want to jump in there and say, "Do you know who you're talking to? This yep. person, you know, we could sit down and talk for 5 hours, and he would never, or she would never cover the same information twice. It could just tell you so much about that question you just asked." But you just sit back and appreciate the character Absolutely. Of that person. That's fun to see.
It is. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, I had a thought come to me the first time I went to a specialty running store. I'm even go a little bit deeper than that. A specialty trail running store, and we can mention it because
Heck
they're great
yeah,
people. Auburn Running Company here
in Auburn, California, right?
I remember going in there and getting fit, and you could tell very quickly that the person in there, first of all, loved running, but was a trail runner.
Well, you've seen him out on the trail.
I think one of the first questions they asked, they said, "What are you training for?"
Yeah, that's a nice question.
And that is a good indicator that they care.
They know the race series. They know what's going on around here.
Right. But here is one of the things that I thought was, I'd never had this happen before. When we finally narrowed it down to a couple different shoes, they put a shoe on me and they said, "Okay, now go outside and run in it for a while." Mm. And yeah. I went,
"What?
Like now?" and they said, "Yeah, just go, run up and down the street for, you know, 5-10 minutes and see what you think and see if there's any hot spots or
yeah.
if there's any, you know, pressure points or anything like that." And so I did. And I'll tell you what, the shoe that we had, I remember the first shoe that I went out there and it felt great in the store. But when I got out there and started running in it, just up and down the block, I noticed there were some things that were bad about it.
Ryan, if I could just go ahead. I see you ready
well,
to follow.
Well, no, I was going to say, you know, that's very, very true. If what we do in our evaluation in the shop, you know, to find out, you know, what the person is doing, you know, really and kind of lead them in the right, let's say they are in a, they want to do a minimal shoe. Okay. So we pick four of them out. Well, yeah, you know, it may feel very different walking around here, but they're going to be running in the shoe. So I actually had a Saturday, which typically Saturdays at run shops are real, real busy. And somebody came in and we had, I think 5 or 6 pairs of shoes and they went out and I said, "Yeah, go run in them." Well, they went out and ran about 10 minutes per shoe. So total, they were gone running for about an hour. So they got their workout in
yeah.
for the day. And they came back and were sweaty because it was middle of the day. And they said, "Yep, this is going to work for me." And you know, and so if someplace, if you ask them, "Can I go and kind of test this out outside?" And they say, no, you know, "We don't want you to do that." Say, "Okay, thanks." And you should move on to another place. I mean, that's a key part of the fit process. Go ahead, Don. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I was going to say, you know, that's a good tip that we can take away from this podcast is – maybe within your training program, you should go do a run at a running store.
mm-hmm.
Go bring a pair of shorts.
Go. Never. Go get your training run in at a running store, and you know, go run laps around the building for an hour with different shoes.
Unless, yeah. Go ahead.
The one thing I would say with that,
yeah.
When you test that, when you go to a running store and test out the shoes, do not figure out which one's going to work best for you and then leave and go buy them on the internet.
Oh, no,
100%.
We've actually talked about that from the very beginning of this podcast. That's a huge no-no. Yeah. You will have bad karma, trail karma for years.
Trip, fall, bonk on runs that you normally handle well. All of those things.
Your IT band will snap in half.
It will play the note G when you.
It'll play the Trail of Tears.
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna throw something in. This is a life lesson that I learned one time. I was buying, and I'll make it short, Don. I know you're going, oh great, another story from Scott. No. When I was buying a lawnmower, I did all the research. I knew exactly what I wanted. I went into like 5 different places, talked to the salespeople. I finally found out this is the one that I want. And I went into this place. I knew what they cost. And I went into this place and I said, okay, so how much? And he gave me a price. And I said, you know, you're about $50 high. You're about $50 high. Can you do any better? And he goes, yep, I can. But I'm not going to. He says, I deserve to make a little bit of money on this, don't you think?
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? You're exactly right. And I bought the lawnmower from him.
You have the greenest lawn on the block, Scott.
It's because I mowed them in my running shoes.
Oh.
Old running shoes.
Here's something that I think the IRRA put out about shopping local. If you spend $100 on a pair of shoes at a local specialty run shop, $68 of it goes back into the local economy, okay, local community. At a big box store or online, it's only about $42. So if you think about it, your running community, the people that you love to be around, the events that you love to be a part of, the trails you love to run on, the safety of the roads you love to be you love to run on, is because of to a certain extent the dollars that are being put back into your local community. So I think folks need to think about that. Think about the time they spend, you know, a footwear specialist spends with them. Yeah, that's time out of their day. It's an hour out of their day that, you know, and you're right, Scott, the person's it's their livelihood. I mean, this is what I do. I don't do anything else. So, you know, but I think people understand that. People have been very, very good about it. And that's what I love about the running community too, is we're passionate, we're tight knit. Doesn't matter if we're talking between California and Louisiana, you know, we're one big running community.
So here's a quick question for you.
Mm-hmm.
If someone goes out and runs for 10 minutes, 20 minutes in a pair of shoes, do you put them back in the box and sell them to someone else if they don't like them?
Well, yeah, Scott, you have to. I'm wear them out in 10 minutes.
Well,
shoes don't have feelings.
They're not saying, no, don't put me back. You know, Scott, I think that folks, when they come into a specialty run shop, know or they'll find out that you can go and test the shoes out. So I don't know if people actually think about it that, oh, somebody else may have had this on. I will say if somebody comes back and the shoe is got a little bit of moisture in it, you know, they've been out 10 minutes, they've been working hard, you definitely want to let them air out and breathe. But Don, you're right. You're not going to wear the shoe out in 10 minutes. So if there's a ton of mud and so forth on there, if somebody goes out and traipses through mud in 10 minutes and the shoe, it's not resellable, I would say, and I guess every retailer is different. I don't know if there's a theme through the running footwear community, but most times, if it's clean and resellable and not damaged, it can be sold again. But I mean, I would also say too, the companies are real good about taking back shoes that might be defective or excessively worn. You know, it sounds kind of funny, but you know they support the running communities as well.
And I think of it as if someone's been in the shoe, I want to put on a few different shoes, so I'm good with it. And I also think, you know, this is one of my, since I'm only wearing guy shoes, this is a trail brother. He's out there running it. I'm very happy to share with a fellow runner and let them out there. Now, if it was a dress shoe, Scott, and I was in some I don't want some stiff putting my dress shoe on. But a running shoe, I would Scott, I'd let you wear my shoe and see if you liked
it. Well, and I think, too, that, you know, having a little bit broken in, there may actually be an advantage.
Oh, listen to you. Nice spin. But now, here's what I wanted to say about 15 minutes ago. It's tough to get a comment in with talking to people. That is, if you're going to go do your workout that you're talking about, maybe bring a couple pairs of socks. If you're really going to start sweating them up, you might decrease some of the moisture by just changing the socks.
Or if you're going to offset the use of the store shoes, buy a different pair of socks for each pair. That's only, you know, some pairs of socks might be $8, some may be $15, depending. That might be a nice thing to do as well.
And you can never have enough pair of socks.
You just
never.
Ever.
Ever, ever, ever.
Is there an advantage to the $15 sock versus my $1.50 sock that I might pick up on special?
Absolutely.
I think Scott just answered it.
Absolutely.
when you look at some of the socks, that cost a little bit more. You know, there's Features and Swift Wicks and Belegas and Smart Wool, you know, whatever. I don't know what you guys
I love use. The Belega. Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. Belega Hidden Dry, the Hidden Dry 2 is my favorite sock. But I will wear the Njinji toe socks.
Mm-hmm. Me Ooh, too. Yeah.
Not, That's one
not
of my
in a
favorites.
Toe shoe, just in a regular shoe. I think, when you know, typically to make a little bit better, higher quality sock, it costs a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the key thing is don't have cotton. Don't have cotton at all in anything that you have on your body unless you want to just be married to a stick of Body Glide.
Which they do have at your specialty running shop.
Yes, they do. Yep. Yeah, we do. So, you know, I think that it's all relative. You can, you know, you can find some good socks for $9-$10. And then there are also some that are anatomically fit left and right.
Yep.
And they'll talk to you at 5 a.m. and say, "Dom, put on your right sock now." and so, I guess for socks, it's kind of relative. I definitely see a higher quality sock bring a little bit higher price point.
You know, do you have this problem? I'm currently having this problem with some of my Njinjis that are right and left.
Uh-huh.
I have a pile in my closet of of where I keep all my running stuff. I have a pile of lefts.
Huh,
I have no idea where the rights went. Do you?
Yeah, let's get together.
I have no idea where the rights are going, but I have like 3 lefts that I can't find the pair for. Huh. And I'm just thinking that just makes me angry because they're still very good socks. I mean,
yeah, but if you tried to put on a left foot on the right foot, your heel would be on the top of your foot and that wouldn't work very well.
Well, we've talked about this. This is a funny story that Don has a tradition of opening a brand new pair of Njinjis at the beginning of races.
That is my tradition. I break them out.
And he was at a race and he opened up the pair of new socks and they were 2 of the right of the same size, same foot, right? Were they rights?
You know, Scott, that morning was such a I told that story, and I believe it to be true because I remember I had a 2 right pairs of socks. But I've got to think in Njinji saying, you know, that is impossible. That could even happen. And this guy, but so much went wrong that day that, one, I would question whether it could happen because everything happened wrong. So,
but I want to say I would have never thought of this, Ryan. I don't know if you've heard this podcast, but I would have never thought of this. He turned it inside out and put it on the foot. And he ran 100 miles in them.
Wow, that is a veteran runner right there.
Oh, that's a desperate runner. Let me tell you,
desperate times.
Desperation.
Well, I will say for folks, you know, Don, your tradition is a little bit outside of what we would normally recommend to a newbie runner in that don't do anything new on race day.
You know what? Don professes that, but then he says, "Oh, but I always break out a brand new pair of socks."
Yeah.
You're going, what? You contradict yourself all the time.
Here's the thing. If you've used Njinjis before, you know, and they just break out a new pair, there's probably not going to be that much of a difference. But it's like the folks that break out a brand new shirt. They've never worn that style before.
Right.
A brand new pair of shorts or you know, that's totally – socks. Socks are important. Don't get me wrong. Some folks go without them, and that's fine. But, you know, it chances are it's not going to make or break your race.
There are if you're wearing different gear, different shirt, different shorts, you know, there's chafage points mm-hmm. that you can pay dearly for, especially in a pair of shorts, you know. And I tell you, it's I only wear well proven shorts. Even if it was the same shorts, I would not even go there. That is like the number one thing. They have to be trail proven with me before I'll climb into a new pair, even same style.
We have our training group for an October half marathon here, and one of the things that I'll tell our group is that when we do our long runs on Saturday, find something that you think you're going to wear on race day and wear it every Saturday in the lead up to the event. And just so you know, like you just said, it's proven, it's worn, it'll be clean because you'll wash it beforehand, but your body will have gotten used to it, and you can figure out early on, are there any chafe points that I need to address, change the shirt entirely, lube up extra, whatever it may be. So, you know, they'll seem at the same get up every Saturday.
I want to talk about laces.
All right, let's talk laces.
You know, that's again another thing. As I started running, lacing was a big deal. You know, I used to tie my shoes the way I normally tie my shoes, and I would find that my feet would go to sleep. You know, mm-hmm. the toes would start tingling, and then somebody said, well, hey, idiot, you need to, you don't tighten your shoes, you know, tighten them up as tight. So talk to us about lacing. How important is lacing? Should I use laces? Should I use those little elastic laces?
I use Velcro. Those two nice straps that go right over the top.
Do you buy your running shoes at Walmart?
You have leather shoes.
So talk to us about lacing. Yeah. How important is it, and what do you recommend?
The main goal of lacing in a shoe is to really keep it on your foot. And that might sound trivial, but I mean, really, that is it. Sometimes there's lacing structures that, you know, they pull in some of the sidewall of the shoe to kind of ratchet it down to your foot. You really don't need to tie it tight. What I recommend to folks is just take enough slack out of the laces so it's not loose, but again, not tight. Just take the slack out of the laces, and that's how you tie your shoe. I mean, I can slip my shoes on and off without untying them, and people may cringe at that, and that's not really a big deal. It's when people kick their shoes off without untying them, and they put their, you know, kind of foot on the
back of the heel.
You got it. Yes. That's where you can start to damage the back of the shoe and the heel counter if you have a shoe that has a heel counter. So that's where lacing comes in. Then is that if that shoe is really, really tight from your laces, and that's how you typically take your shoes off, you may start to break down that shoe a little bit prematurely. Like we talked about earlier in the podcast, things to affect the shoes. That may be one of them. So, you know, elastic laces versus regular laces versus those knotty laces that that we see. I think Brooks and New Balance have come out with those in the past. And actually, the Pure Grit had those knotty laces to keep tied. You know, it depends on what you like. I do not like the elastic laces. A lot of the, you know, Dustin has the elastic laces, but he does triathlons. You know, even in his training runs here for, you know, for Ironman Mont Tremblant, he uses the elastic laces. He'll go out for a 20-mile run. So it's not just all about, you know, speed. Some people just prefer that feel and the slip on and off feel. I like the precise whatever, you know, of pulling the lace and making sure I have the right tension on each part of the foot with regular laces. So how important is it? I think it's just important enough to keep it on your foot, not have your foot fall asleep, not have the blood supply to your foot be impaired. Because if you start to do that stuff, everything will get, your foot function will be altered. And so, you know, so I think you have to kind of think about that. But I think that's kind of a preference thing. I think if folks need a quick transition, if they're in a triathlon and need a quick transition, elastic laces are good. If they have the time to lace up their shoes, you know, I say go that route. But I think that's a preference thing as well. Kind of the same way socks are. Socks are preference too.
Our feet swell a little bit in a long run. So lacing them up in the beginning, keeping that in mind. Although it's nice to have an excuse to stop and loosen up the laces. That's always kind of a nice break. Say, you know, I'm at mile 10. I'm going to stop a little bit and loosen this up. But on race day, you might remember that our feet swell a bit.
I like laces that I don't come untied. There is a shoe, and Don knows exactly which shoe I'm talking about, that I used to wear quite a bit, and they would come untied all the time. Even if I double knotted them for some reason.
Really?
We're among friends. Let's just throw it out there, because if we're on a trail run like we talk about, we would, and we try to make our podcast like a trail run, what shoe is that, Scott? The Montrail? Which one?
Now I forgot the name of it.
Well, you can't forget the name.
No, what was the name of it? I had like 10 pair of these shoes, and I still love them.
They all came untied?
They all did.
Yeah,
for some reason.
It was a slippery lace. Mine did the same thing.
It's one of the most popular Montrail shoes. What is it?
So sometimes the round laces versus the flat or oval laces react differently. So you might just simply try a different shape of the lace.
You know, I these Kinvaras have the old style flat shoelaces, and I noticed that they do amazing. They never come untied.
Now there's a place you might want to have cotton, Dr. Green, because I have some cotton laces that just stay tight. It's like, you know, back in the 50s, they had it down, a flat shoelace that's made of cotton.
True. You're true. I stand corrected.
You know, I have one question. Don brought it up that during a race your feet swell. I've always heard that to go when you go and get your shoes fitted, and when you're going and trying on shoes, it's better to go later in the day because you've been on your feet all day and they've had a chance to swell.
Good point.
It's better to go in the later part of the day versus the morning to get your shoes fit. Is that true?
I think in an ideal world, yes. Because you have been on your feet, you know, the body tends to retain fluid and gravity will pull that fluid down towards the feet throughout the day. And so you'll usually find, and I've seen folks that'll be, you know, they've come in beginning of a day and they may be a men's size 10. And they say, well, I usually run though at the end of the day after work. I say, all right, well, can you come back after today? Yes. So they do. And they're a 10 and a half, even an 11. And we've seen their foot swell. And that's just one individual. But end of the day is usually a better time to fit your feet because that's about as swollen as your foot's going to be. But then you'll have folks that'll say, well, but if I run in the morning, my feet aren't as swollen. Mm. You're better off with having a little bit more room in your shoe than not having enough. So I would rather get the shoe slightly larger than be exact or have it a little bit smaller. And then you beat up your toes.
I was very resistant in the beginning to go up a size in a shoe. You know how that's, and talk to us about this, because my whole life I was buying a certain size shoe, and I really didn't. When you're running trail, you should go up how much? Tell us how much, but before you do, let me tell you, folks, give in. Go ahead and go up larger than you think. I didn't want to wear a size 12 because in my mind that was so big. And it would be like wearing ankle weights to run in. I thought there are boats. Why would I wear such a big shoe?
So I know that you don't call them size 12s. You go by metric now.
Yeah, that's right. I order and talk to
nobody knows that.
Well, I can wear a 46. I'm fine with that. It was the 12 that killed me.
Well, look, think about this. You're not running on the trail saying, I wear a size 12. I wear a size 12. You know, you don't have neon lights going with you. So nobody's going to know. So some people, for the sake of vanity, they don't want to. You know, I've never worn, and I find this more in women than men, but there are certain men that are affected by the size
Ouch.
Number.
Ouch.
I guess size matters. And so they are very concerned about that number. So what I'll do, and not to pull the wool over the eyes of the customer, but I won't show, you know, I'll ask them what size they typically wear. I don't use that Brannock device anymore, that thing you step on that measures your foot, because the shoe sizes are so different and people's feet are so different.
Yeah.
So I'll ask them what they typically wear, even in a casual shoe, a dress shoe. And then I'll bring out a half to a full size above that. And I'll tell them that, because that's important. I tell them that, you know, up front, you may be a half to a full size above what your casual shoe is. And then I'll bring them out and we'll just try them on and we'll see what feels the best. And then they may even be a size and a half. We had a lady over the weekend that was 2.5 sizes larger than what she came in with. It was ugly.
Was her name Cinderella?
The horses stayed out back while she was shopping. So that's really something for folks to consider, is that don't worry about the number on the shoe. Think about how the shoe fits and feels on their foot. That's paramount.
Does color really make you faster? You know, I have a shoe that, Scott, I have a bias with this particular shoe because it looks like an orthopedic device. it just looks slow and heavy. And I know.
Which one? Tell me.
No, I'm not going to tell you because I don't want to say. And the shoe you were thinking of earlier, Scott, is the Montreal Mountain Masochist.
Mountain Masochist.
Yeah,
the thing. Shoelaces.
Yeah.
Change out the shoelaces. The shoelaces suck. The shoe's a great shoe.
Great
Just
shoe.
Change out the shoelaces.
So anyway, I get over. I have to find, you know, like the La Sportiva Crosslight. That is such a good-looking shoe. I just feel fast when I wear it, put that on. You know, so there's something to appearance.
Yeah, and, you know, I know some folks that'll break out not a brand new shoe on race day out of the box like some people do with socks, but they'll break out a new color a couple days before, wear it a little bit. Yeah, it might be a fire red or a blazing yellow, and they feel you know, feel fast. That's psychological. That has no bearing on the actual performance of the shoe. But you know what? So much of what we do is psychological.
Yeah.
When you're out on a, you know, 100-mile, you know, 100-miler, you have got to play mind games with yourself. So if you have a fun colored shoe on, your feet feel light, your body feels light, you can get through those miles.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have any physical performance, maybe Jay wants to study that too. Does color matter on shoes? But yeah, I think people psychologically feel better and faster if they have new shoes and if they have maybe brightly colored shoes.
Yeah. Okay, so I have one final question for you, Ryan. Mm-hmm. Why did the shoe companies change the shoe?
Oh, wait, this is podcast two.
Why do they do that? I have a shoe that I like, and then they go to the Mountain Masochist 3.
Right.
And I'm going,
what about the 2?
Yeah, I like the 2. Why did you change it? I don't mind them changing colors. In fact, I think that's kind of fun if they change the colors.
And the laces.
And the laces. But why did they change it? Why?
So, you know, there's a saying, if you don't change, you die. You know,
okay.
So if companies don't change and evolve and they're stuck in one rut, they may die off. And that's probably going extreme, but you kind of get the idea. So
sure.
If there's not evolution of footwear, you know, if humans haven't developed, you know, we might still be stuck on, you know, four legs, so to speak, but we've evolved as humans into runners. Shoe companies now need to evolve and change to keep up with their competitors, to keep up with the changing market, you know, to keep up with the runners that are maybe demanding a change. You know, there's some companies that are stuck in their old ways and it's just not working anymore.
You know, when we go down the chip aisle for anybody that's ever had, I'm just using this as an example.
Potato chips?
I'm not advocating potato chips. Okay.
No. Timing chip?
No, time, that would be better.
Yeah.
But as you go down that lane and you see so many varieties and cereal and sodas, I mean, just all of these things, it's amazing how much variety we have today compared to some 20 or 30 years ago. For those that are not around back then, I was around back then, and there was just a few choices. Man, where are we going? Where is it going to be in another 20 years? Is it going to be so many choices that we're not going to know what to do? Or do you think we're narrowing in? Ryan, do you think we're narrowing in on the answer to this stuff?
I don't think we'll ever have the answer. I think things will always be changing and evolving. So I've been involved in this industry for about 10 years now. And I've seen, especially over the last 5 years since we've had our store in Mandeville here, and I've seen things kind of come in and come out, how footwear has changed for sure. And whether, you know, the extreme of being in a barefoot-like shoe, you know, is it going to come back to traditional shoes or not? I, you know, only time will tell. And I would love, if I had the answer, I could fund you guys for years and years and years.
Well, get that answer. We need some funding over here.
We'll work on that. But I don't know. I think as things change and evolve, I don't think we'll ever have the answer of perfect running form, perfect shoes, perfect nutrition, because everything is constantly changing. But I love it. I love the fact that every day, you know, when I come in, I'm not going to have the same cookie cutter approach to everybody that comes in here. We're not going to have the same exact person. You know, it may be a trail runner. It may be somebody getting up off the couch that is trying to lower their chance of heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
It may be somebody that we've seen for 3 years now, but now they have an injury. So that changes things. So I think things are constantly changing and evolving.
Good.
Well, and I think change is good too, because it helps motivate you get out and train more. I know that if Don puts on a new pair of shoes and he hops in my truck and on a morning and I go, oh, new shoes. Well, not only is that a motivation for Don, but it's a motivation for me to talk about it on the trail run. Okay, tell me about those shoes. How do you like them?
Yeah.
What do you think about them? And I think that it's important too, with all the variety out there, that just like we've talked about, you need to go to a reliable source, which is usually the small mom and pop specialty running store. Talk to those people that are usually runners themselves. They're passionate about the sport.
Mm-hmm.
They've gone and done the training with not only the manufacturers, but also with the shoe fitting trainings that they go to,
and the other people coming in giving some feedback. You're learning from other customers.
So it's very valuable to go to those local running stores, support them. If you don't, you're going to have bad karma.
Well, and here's the other thing too, is that, you know, I kind of see the folks at the running stores as kind of triaging the situation. You know, so if somebody comes in and says, "Oh, I have this back pain," or "I have, you know, this shin issue," well, they've developed if they don't have the answer, they have a network of folks to pull on to help that runner get the answer. You know, I don't have all the fun tools that Jay has at his lab, or, you know, I lean on, you know, Dr. Mark or, you know, Sock Doc and so forth. And I listen to the experts that you guys bring on as well. So it's that education side is constantly evolving. And I think that's where the specialty run shops are always listening for that information so that they can figure out how to help their customer.
Well, Ryan, where are your stores located? If we're down in Louisiana, we need a pair of shoes, kind of point us in the direction and let us know where you're at.
We have one in Baton Rouge. It's about 2 miles from the LSU campus. We have our Mandeville shop where I am. We're about a block off of Lake Pontchartrain. We have one in New Orleans on Magazine Street. And we have one in the Elmwood Fitness Center, kind of in the New Orleans area as well for a bit. So so we have four down here. Yeah, we'd love to see you guys if you come down here. We got some trail runs down here. We got some good racing, road racing too. So any of your gang, you know, feel free to stop in. Love to see you.
Don't you
any of the nation.
You have snakes and alligators there though too, right?
We do, which makes trail running, you know, totally different than probably what you guys are used to.
Yeah, that's right. So make sure
serpentine,
you go with
serpentine.
That's all I got to worry about is all those snakes.
That's why it's important to go out with somebody you know and run.
Yeah.
That's right.
We'll link
trail guide.
We'll link Varsity Sports their website, Facebook, and Twitter pages on the podcast. So
awesome.
if you're down that area, great, or if you just want to get some good information, if you don't have a local running store, or if you want to validate what your local running store is telling you, I'm sure that Ryan would take your call.
Awesome.
Be happy to.
Very good.
Now, so go get some Montrail Mountain Masochist with some good laces.
There you go. You're making up with Montrail right now, huh?
No, they're good shoes. I like them.
Awesome. Awesome stuff over there.
Great, guys.
Well, we appreciate you coming on the podcast, and you know, we threw around some what topics we might talk about. I think we made it through two of the many.
We do need to have a follow-up with Ryan.
So we learned a lot, and we appreciate your time and your expertise.
Thanks, guys. Take care. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you. Now, Trail Runner Nation members, go to the...
Scott? We have a website, trailrunnernation.com.
Yeah.
We're on Twitter at We Are Nation.
Right. Check.
We have a Facebook page.
Check.
So go check those out.
Put on a Cocopelli?
Yeah, go get a Cocopelli.
Check some gear reviews out. We've got a lot of shoes on there. We've got shoes. We've got watches. We've got shirts. We have sunglasses. We got a lot of good stuff to check out.
Yeah, hydration packs.
Yeah.
All sorts of stuff. Go get yourself a new pair of shoes
at your local running store. Go check them out. Go introduce them. And I bet you've seen them on the trail somewhere. Go say hello.
Introduce yourself.
And now go out and run.
Mas.